You are listening to the Mahogany Says Show with your host, Mahogany Silverain, on Blog Talk Radio, MahoganySilverain.net. I'm Dream Castle, brilliant and bad. I was my family's fixer. I was the queen of negotiating. I had never met a situation I couldn't talk us out of until my brother crossed the wrong family and they would accept only one payment for that debt, me. For 30 days, I was supposed to give myself to a man so brutal, they called him Demon. I had to follow his rules and demands and be available only to him. When I met him, he had nightmares in his cold green eyes. Except those eyes seemed to thaw a little each time he looked at me. There was so much more to the enigma called Demon, so many things that made him my Damien. Suddenly, the only thing I was worried about losing in 30 days was my heart. Demon's Dream, An Unexpected Love by L. Cason, now available on Amazon. Get your copy today. Those who knew the streets in Houston knew one thing for sure. The four brothers of the Kinsey cartel were crazy as hell. The eldest two, Tramell and Tristan, aka Trey and Tripp, might have just been the craziest of all. Crossing any of them could end your life. No one messed with them until a pair of best friends, Shamar and Sin, came in and turned their world upside down. Shamar Parker, a quiet college girl, found herself given to Trey as collateral. Trey's captive would soon become his lover, and he vowed never to let her go. With an attitude the polar opposite of her best friend, Sin Murray stormed into Tripp's life, demanding the return of her friend. In the process, she also stormed into his heart, and Tripp knew he had to lock her down. But the Kinseys' old habits died hard, and their lifestyle threatened to push the women they wanted most out of their lives. Can their love survive the streets? The Beauty of This Street Love, A Texas Tale, by L. Cason, now available on Amazon. Get your copy today. Southern Comfort, by best-selling author L. Loren. Garrison Daniels is on the run after a failed attempt to murder his brother and overthrow his father as boss of the Enterprise faction. Knowing his days are numbered, why would he be in a mansion filled with his father's deadliest associates? One word, Melina. She was getting married, but knew Garrison could never resist disrupting the ceremony. Melina is Enterprise's top assassin, and the wedding, just a ruse to draw out her mark. She's always been Garrison's ride or die. What happens when the sentiment becomes reality? Southern Comfort, a smooth, sweet, and 100-proof interracial erotic romance. Part of the Lunchtime Chronicles. Written by best-selling author L. Loren. Get your copy on Amazon today. You're listening to the Mahogany Says Show with your host, Mahogany Silverain, on Blog Talk Radio, MahoganySilverain.net. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the Mahogany Show, Mahogany Says Show, pardon me. I am your host, Mahogany Silverain, and we have a wonderful show tonight coming live from the UK. We will be talking with Pamela R. Haynes. Pamela?
Hello there. Hi. Good evening to you.
Hello. Well, I'm glad that you actually called in tonight and asked for another interview because you have a great second book. And I know we loved Loving the Brothers. So could you tell everyone who has not heard of you before who you are and a little bit about your book?
Yes, yeah, sure. My name is Pamela Haynes. I was born in London, still here, living in East London with my family. In 2018, I think, was the last time spoke. I wrote my first book, which was called Loving the Brothers. The book is about three women who interact with a set of brothers called the Morgan Brothers. Things aren't quite what they seem. and the women plot to leave the brothers on the same day. I don't know if you recall, I left everybody on a huge cliffhanger. And 4 years later, I landed a three-deal publishing deal with a small press in South Dakota. And
well, that's awesome.
Yeah, Loving the Sisters. Yeah, Loving the Sisters was born, and I'm writing the third book at the moment. So Loving the Sisters more or less explains how the women support each other. If you like Greenleaf or The Real Housewives of Atlanta. Yeah,
yes.
And this is us. It's a bit like that. They're the closest shows, I would say, that Loving the Sisters is about. And I'm writing the third book at the moment, which deals with the fallout for months the women have left. What happens and the impact of domestic abuse on their children. So that's, in a nutshell, is what the trilogy is about.
Okay. So can you tell us a little bit about Patty, Charmaine, and Rose?
Yep. Patty is a, they're all black women, which I think is important to say. There are different age groups. Patty is 45, Charmaine is 25, and Rose is 35. Patty is a professional, so she is a senior probation officer working in London. Rose is the pastor's wife who has five children, and Charmaine is the youngest of the group. She is 25 with a set of twins, but, you know, she feels as though she's in a marriage and doing everything by herself. So it's interesting how the women meet. They travel from London to Jamaica to attend a funeral, and they join forces there. So in a nutshell, it's about how the women support each other, how they meet and how they support each other through, I suppose, what relationships, you know, when they go wrong. And we also explore what when relationships go right and how we court in London and some of the activities that we get up to and how people meet each other. So there's a love story that's woven through the book as well.
Oh, nice. Well, I love the first one, so I'm pretty sure that you will love this one. So what inspired you to write Loving the Sisters?
Okay. I knew from the beginning it was always going to be a trilogy. So Loving the Brothers was the first book, Loving the Sisters is the second, and Loving the Children is the third. But originally when I wrote Loving the Brothers, I was approaching a milestone birthday, and I wanted to acknowledge it in some way. I wanted to let the world know that I was here. So it came down to three choices. Do my master's. You know, I had this illusion of walking across the stage in my milestone year and collecting my master's, go on a cruise, or write a book. Now, those three things are very expensive, so I narrowed them down to two. I didn't think I had the headspace for returning to academic studies again. So I went to an award ceremony as a plus one with my friend and happened to sit next to a woman who was an author. And I say what I always say, one day I'm going to write a book. And she said, well, stick with me. I'm moving into publishing and I'd love to make that dream come true for you. So she supported me. I called her Marcia the midwife because she supported me all the way through until my book was birthed on the 8th of January 2018. So originally it was all about me and wanting to, you know, get through one of those things on my bucket list. I did go on the cruise as well, went on a Caribbean cruise, which was fantastic. And as I said, she supported me all the way through until the book was completed. And then in 2022, I already had the manuscript for Loving the Sisters. It was being touted around as you do, getting an agent, going to the top five to try and get a publishing offer. To no avail. I mean, it was very disheartening when the rejection letters, you know, start coming through.
Yes.
But this small press in South Carolina took me on. And, you know, absolutely delighted that they did. They wanted all three books. which gave me the opportunity to rewrite the original, the first edition of Love in the Brothers. So Love in the Brothers 2.0, as I call it, has three additional chapters, and it feels more complete. Yeah, I felt, well, you upgrade your phone every 2 years, so why not upgrade the book when you're given the opportunity? So that's what I did, yeah.
Oh, okay. So now I have to read those chapters because I read the first book. So yeah, I'm going to look for that now because I know I enjoyed it.
Okay, excellent.
So yeah, that would definitely be on my list. So what advice would you give another new writer, just someone just starting out?
Yeah, I would say don't wait until you have a flash computer, flash laptop, and with all the latest software. Just make a start with pen and paper and just jot down your ideas and where you'd like to go, because there's lots of decisions you can actually make before committing your manuscript to in a digital format. So I would say grab a notebook, grab a pen, find somewhere quiet to sit and just start writing. And that could be journaling, just journaling your thoughts and your idea. We know that Oprah Winfrey is a massive writes loads of journals and keeps a journal. And it could be that. It could be for therapeutic reasons why people want to write, or you might be looking to publish at some stage. So I will say start simple, and then when you have something substantial, run it by a group of friends. So I've got three women who I call Team Haynes, hashtag Team Haynes, who help.
Yeah,
because, you know, when you're writing on your own. So it's wonderful to be able to send them a chapter in real time. They'll have a look through, see how it flows, see whether it complements, you know, my first book and my second book, and come back to me with real feedback. I have found Clubhouse really, really supportive. So there are a few rooms in Clubhouse where you get the chance to come up on stage and actually read through your work in progress. And again, you get feedback in real time from members of the room who are also, you know, authors, poets, spoken word, you know, you name it, they're there. And I found them really supportive on my writing, on my writing journey. I would also say if you can join groups who are writing on a regular basis. So there are in every town there should be a writing community. Take part. Some of them are free of charge. Some of them, you know, the outlay is very minor, or pay as you go, and go along and just sit and learn from others. So I would say they are the kinds of activities I would encourage an emerging writer to do.
Most definitely, because you can always improve your writing. It doesn't matter how long you've been writing. I believe you can continue learning new things that you'll become an excellent writer. So what is the most difficult part, would you say, for you about writing?
Yeah, I think for me it would be trying to manage a disability. So I'm partially sighted. I have problems with my eyes. And, you know, that would be the major thing that has prevented me I wouldn't say prevent, but has delayed my progress as I would like to. I'm very much ruled by how much vision I have on the day when I start writing. But the beauty of having new technology is that there are loads of you know, programs out there that can help support your writing. The Royal National Institute for the Blind here in London also run workshops for partially sighted people who want to write. So I have found them very useful in terms of helping to support me on my writing journey. I would also say managing the 9-to-5 can be difficult if you're on the laptop all day at work. The last thing you want to do is to come home and jump on the laptop and start writing. So those kind of commitments can be stumbling blocks as well. So I've come up really knowing what my writing style is. So am I an early bird? Am I a member of the 5 o'clock club that like to wake up at 5 in the morning and do a couple of hours of writing before you go to work? Or am I a night owl? You know, so you have some people who start writing at maybe 11 o'clock at night to maybe 2 in the morning. So mm-hmm. it's about knowing how to fit writing into your schedule. So when I was a student at university and I had young children, the best time for me to do my essays was between 8 o'clock and 12 p.m. So I pulled on some of those things that I was already doing as a student and mm-hmm. created a table for myself where I could write. So sometimes I was an early bird and sometimes I was a night owl, but make a commitment to writing that suits your lifestyle.
Yes, that is definitely for sure. So are you still working full time or has writing taken over that?
I retired in 2018 as the book came out. I'm finding that I'm more busy now than when I was working full time. So it does make me ask the question, how would I have fitted it all in? Because when you write a book and you publish a book, you then become an expert in the particular subjects that you've chosen to write about. So invitations, especially during the pandemic and the lockdown in London, people were inviting me all the time for Zoom conferences, Zoom calls. I'm an expert now in StreamYard, Teams, Zoom, the whole lot, because people were inviting me to conferences all over the world. So,
it does make
me wonder if I hadn't retired, how would I have been able to fit it all in? And I've been able to travel with my book as well. So I have traveled the length and breadth of the UK. I have been to Ireland with my book in Dublin. I've been to Barbados with my book as well. So now things are opened up. I'm looking forward to getting invitations to travel again and talk about the themes arising from my book.
Ooh, that's amazing. I love that you get to travel. And so, yes, you're definitely more busy than when you're working full time. So how is it that you yourself was able to put your book out and promote so that you can get these offers coming in?
It's interesting. I said to somebody recently that I believe that 90% of the opportunities I've had to talk about my books and the themes arising from them have come from social media. So I was already on Facebook, but when my children moved over to Instagram, I opened up an account so that I could spy on them to find out what they were doing. And they quickly then moved to Snapchat, and I didn't have the energy to go to Snapchat. But I started off with about, maybe 100, 150 people who on that account. And 6 months leading up to the book being published, I decided to really go for it on social media to let people know that I was there, to give them little snippets from the book, to share my book covers when they came out, and the opportunities started to roll in. So I'm on maybe 3,500 people at the moment. I'm looking forward to having at least 4,000 followers by the end of the year.
People
are adding, following me almost on a daily basis. I've got about 600 people on my author page on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I can't get my head around Twitter, but I'm going to try to see if I can follow other authors on Twitter. To see what they're up to, fiction writers. And I'm also on LinkedIn as well, which is like a professional site. So people have seen me there and given me opportunities to be involved in what they're doing as well.
Oh, that's amazing. There's also a writer's group that's on LinkedIn that I joined because I'm also on LinkedIn. So I think it would be great for me to join as well, which is that another resource.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's really just amazing to be part of a writing community, and you can see what other people are up to, how other people are inspired, share ideas, and so on, because outside of that, it's quite a solitude activity to be doing. You're on your own. At the end of the day, it's nice to be invited to these lovely things. I just got tickets through to go to a charity event, and I, someone sent me some complimentary tickets, which is really nice. But at the end of the day, you still have to get down, knuckle down, and write your manuscript. So, you know, that's my number one discipline that I need to embed, is that I need to write every day.
Yes, I think that's really important. Sometimes I don't always do that, but for the most part, I really do enjoy writing. And speaking of, I've read Loving the Brothers. Now, in Loving the Sisters, there were some scenes that were a little emotional. How do you wrap your mind around that? How do you get in the mood to write an emotionally draining scene?
Yeah, I think for me, in some places, if I mention that one of the characters was listening to a particular track, I will play the track. Loving the Brothers and Loving the Sisters has many artists are in the book, because I think for lots of us, music is the background of our lives. And if I'm writing a difficult scene, it's what was really good, especially with my previous publisher. I could ring her after I'd finished writing, and you know, she would talk me down from wherever I was, and you know, and there were tears, because when you're talking about domestic abuse, it can bring up lots of emotions, and that's how people have contacted me as well. They've read particular passages, and then they've called me. You know, one particular fight scene quite early in the book, and people have rung me to talk about it. So they start talking about Charmaine and her her husband Junior, and then they end up telling me their story as well. More recently, a book club member, and they asked to read my book, and one of the ladies mentioned that my book saved her life, and she explained that wasn't aware that she was a victim of domestic abuse until she started to read my books. And she has managed to end that relationship and is in a much better place mentally and physically as well. So I suppose you mentioned themes for it to be, you know, to give people food for thought and to raise those emotions. I'm glad that people tell me they were able to laugh at the bits that were funny, and they were able to cry at the bits that you know, they found quite sad. And I'm glad that the book has helped to empower women to make different choices about the partners that they're with.
Definitely. Most definitely. It sounds very inspiring. So as you being part of the criminal justice system before you retired, did you see many or come across many women who needed help with domestic abuse?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, I was a facilitator on the domestic abuse program. So I worked directly with men who had committed domestic abuse or domestic violence. And the program was 18 months long, so it wasn't a quick fix. The first half of the program was looking at all the behaviors on the power and control wheel. So we looked at what isolation is, what is emotional abuse, how men use intimidation, coercion and threats, what's economic abuse, male privilege, use of children, and how men minimize, deny and blame that the abuse is occurring, and the use of male privilege. So each segment of that course took 9 months to deliver. And then in the latter half of the program, we looked at equipping men with new skills of how they can manage themselves and create a non-toxic environment in their relationships. So we're looking at equality in relationships, for example. The beauty about that program is that whilst we were working with the men, there was another group that was working with the women and supporting them as well, because when a domestic abuse relationship ends, very often women need a lot of support in terms of housing, emotional support, psychiatric help. There's a whole range of help that comes with it. So I was really fortunate to be involved in that program. And also as a mainstream probation officer, quite a few of the women that I worked with were victims of domestic abuse when they were growing up as well. So I was able to see both sides of the coin in terms of working with women, with those women as well. I would say the majority of women in the criminal justice system currently have either witnessed domestic abuse as a child. They were in the next room or in the same room when violence was occurring, and then ended up attracting those kind of men in their adult relationships as well. So that's where my experience and my experiences come from. So the book covers, both books covers the cycle of abuse, you know, however minor and however, you know, however great, you know, that could be, so it's on a continuum.
Oh, that's truly incredible. Especially, I think that's a program that's great working with the men, because it is not something we have here in the United States. Most help the abused women, but none of them try to rehabilitate or even train or work with men who are abusers at all. As a matter of fact, I've been told, having been a domestic abuse survivor, that they often don't even try because most men do not believe that they are wrong in how they treat their women.
Yeah, I mean, they're not volunteered. They're not volunteering themselves to be on the program. They would have to have been sentenced by the court or have gone to prison, and it's a condition on their license. So they come to us very reluctantly, knowing that they could easily go back to prison if they fail to comply with the course. Some men have said, I prefer to go to prison than do this course, because we're making them think, we're challenging them on their offending behavior and their pattern of behavior. The woman that they went to prison for is very often not the first woman that they have beaten. And they have also been victims of domestic abuse as well. So that's one of the very early questions that we ask the men, is when do they recall seeing domestic abuse or violence? And, you know, I do remember one man saying that he was about 3 years old in his mother's arms, and his dad kicked her down the stairs, and she was doing everything she could to break their fall so that he wouldn't get hurt as a child, as a three-year-old. So, yes, very much find that men who are perpetrators have also been victims as well, and it's not an easy road to keep them engaged with the program for 18 months.
Yeah, that sounds very difficult to me. I believe that's true. What's the saying? Hurt people, hurt people.
Absolutely.
So, what is the future of Characters after you finish the third book in the series? Do you have any other series you're going to get involved with, or?
It's interesting because last week I went to visit Simon & Schuster publishing house in central London. And we were talking about what my future plans might look like. So I do have some ideas, but I'm not sure whether it's going to be a standalone novel or whether it's going to be another trilogy. So those decisions I haven't really thought through yet. But my characters are speaking to me and telling me that they want to tell their story. So, for example, you would have met Antoinette Sinclair in Love in the Brothers. She comes to the fore as a central protagonist in Love in the Children that I'm writing at the moment. And she has also given me an idea for another story, which involves a karate club. So when I was writing, remember I told you I just took notebooks, pen and paper, took my son to writing. I would sit at the back of the class with my notebook and I'd just be writing. And the other women viewed me quite suspiciously. You know, they used to always ask me questions. Are you a teacher? Are you? Because I was always scribbling and making notes. And eventually I told them I was a probation officer and they all relaxed around me and invited me into their circle. They were using the karate club to support Asian women who were going through issues of domestic abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So the children would be doing their, you know, their katas and their karate next door, but the women would then be supporting each other around domestic abuse. And I just thought that that was absolutely amazing. So
yeah.
One day I would like to write their story. I would call it the Karate Club. And again, it's about women getting together, supporting each other through hard times and with really good outcomes. So my books will always have a kind of criminal justice feel to them, and it will always have an element of domestic abuse to them. So whatever I write, those are the kind of things I want to be writing about. And the reason why is that people write about the police, they write about lawyers,
right. They
write about other criminals, but nobody really writes about the work the probation service do in terms of safeguarding women and children. So I would like to put us as a probation service at the heart of my stories.
Yes, I believe that's an excellent idea. And I believe any that you write is going to be inspirational to a lot of women and a lot of men, I believe. Because there are some who may have witnessed, but maybe they're not abusers themselves, but have a bit on the opposite scale, where they have a wife who's mentally and verbally abusing them constantly. So I think that would also, is that an idea maybe?
Yes, I mean, because we do know it happens the other way around. All what I've said that men do to women, women do to men as well. You know,
yes.
I do recall a bouncer, of a nightclub. He's 6-foot-odd, broad as the door, and he was being abused by his girlfriend, under 5 foot. And she said to him, if I ring the police, nobody's going to believe you over me because of his size. So, you know, they're really good is that there have been celebrities here who have come out and spoken about the abuse that they have witnessed, that experienced at the hands of their wives and girlfriends and so on. You know, and I've got four boys between my husband and I. We've got four boys and one daughter. And I would like to know that they feel able to come home. You know, they've all still got their door keys. And I do believe that any time of the day and the night that they feel as though they're being threatened, they're unhappy, or that they are led to believe that they have no other options, they can jump in a taxi, they can jump in an Uber, they can use their keys and they can come home.
Oh, that's great. Because it's a safe place for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Home is a safe space for them. And the thing about, you know, the power and control in toxic relationships is that it leads the person who is going through it, the victim, it leads them to believe that they don't have any options except to stay and tolerate it. Right. So regardless of whether it's the victims are male or female, I want my children to know that they will always have an option. They can always come home.
Yes, and that is great as far as, you know, children being able to come home and say, hey, this is what I'm dealing with, and still be able to have that space where they can decompress and relax from things that they've been beat up with out in the world, just in general. And I commend you for having that for your children. That is really needed.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. So now the other part is you have a podcast.
Yes,
and
I do.
Saw that.
Yes, I do.
So tell us a little bit about your podcast.
Okay, the podcast is called the Author to Author Podcast. Like yourself, you're another author. I've been very fortunate with the coverage, the media coverage that I've had for my books. As I said before, I've traveled with my books. I've been on television. I've been on numerous radio programs and other people's podcasts. But what I noticed about being a self-published author is that I wasn't really landing the mainstream media attention. And that's okay, but I was holding out for a BBC interview, and it never really materialized until sometime later. I'm still wanting, BBC World and still wanting BBC Africa and BBC Women's Hour. Yeah. But one day I just woke up, it was International Women's Day, and I woke up and I thought, you know what? Rather than waiting in the wings to be invited, why don't I start my own platform and invite self-published authors onto my show? Yes. And it was as simple as that. That's how the concept came about. I launched it on the 8th of March, 2021. And I cannot believe that I'm now in season 5 of the podcast, getting ready to interview another 10 self-published authors, and it's just books arrive here every day from people wanting to take part. Hearing their stories. Yeah. The podcast is on 20 platforms and on 4 radio stations and 4 hospital radios as well. So covering all different parts of the globe. We've been nominated for the Black Podcast Awards. And more recently, Black Girls Who Write, I was nominated in the podcast category as well. So it's amazing. And I've got sponsorship for my podcast as well.
Yes,
so they help a lot of costs. Yeah. Dolgetty Herbal Teas is a well-known Caribbean herbal tea company. And again, I was making just in the kitchen, making myself a hot drink. And I thought, why don't I reach out to Dolgetty? Teas and books go together. Let me reach out to them and see what they're saying. So Mark Dolgetty is already one of my Facebook friends, although I've not met him personally. I contacted him, gave him my idea, and he gave me the details of who I should contact within his company. We did a pitch over... And the rest, as they say, is history. By the end of the call, they said that they would sponsor me. And they have been absolutely brilliant in terms of supporting me on my podcast journey, but on my book journey as well. And I'm very grateful.
Yes. That is amazing. I'm also in my 5th season, too. So that is incredible how you have grown your podcast. That is truly amazing. That you run across a lot of self-published authors that are otherwise would not get any press because a lot go unseen and unheard about. So that is amazing.
That's right. Yes, one of the ladies who I interviewed, her name is Winston Duncan, and she wrote a children's book called Sleep Baby Sleep, and her episode came in at number 6 in the Mixcloud literary podcast, and I was absolutely ecstatic to get that recognition when it came through. And a lot of the authors have gone on to do other things. They've been absolutely amazing, doing really amazingly well. So yes, it's definitely been to their advantage in terms of coming on the podcast, which is, I don't charge for it, but I do insist that they send me a copy of the book so that I can give it away as a competition prize. And listeners have been competition, and I'm sending books all over the world. So yes, so far so good. It's been going really well.
Oh, wow. That is truly amazing. And that's a great idea for them to send in their books to you. That is awesome. So what are some of the authors that you have interviewed, do you have a favorite book among them that you read them yourself?
I mean, that's my asking me who is my favorite child. I approach them all as though I just want to, if you listen to the podcast, you will see that I say very little. I really am giving the self-published author the opportunity to promote their book, to talk about themselves and to talk about the themes arising from their book. It's their space. And we go down all different kinds of rabbit holes during an interview. No two of them are the same. But that said, episode zero, I interviewed my sponsor. He is the CEO of Dolgetty Teas, the master blender. And I interviewed Mark a few weeks ago, and I have to say that I learned so much just from listening to him about the business world, about world economics, and for me personally, how I've been playing too small. Rather than thinking just about the United Kingdom, I need to be thinking globally of getting my podcast and my brand and my books into Africa. And beyond, really. So he really, you know, a lot of light bulb moments during that interview when I thought, I need to be looking at that. So I learned a lot from that interview. It only came out on Monday, and I got goosebumps to it again when I heard it. He dropped some gems in there that I think that we all can learn from. If we want to do well, we can all learn from him. So I would say at the moment that's my favorite one. But when I interviewed Jade LB, who wrote Keisha Busquets, fiction, and her episode comes out this Monday. And I know that I'll have that goosebump feeling all over again because I'm a fan of Jade's work. She is self-published. Penguin published her. But originally her book came out chapter by chapter on MSN back in the day. And you would be gripped whole week waiting for her to release a little bit more. She was only 13 years old when she wrote her book.
Oh, wow.
And a publishing deal with Penguin recently, and was able to republish her her book. So I would say she's one of the women that shaped me in terms of wanting to write fiction, because I loved Keisha the Scare.
Oh, wow. And that's amazing for such a young person to get signed with Penguin. That's like the epitome of a publisher that most people would like to and never get a chance to. So that is quite an amazing feat for her. Most definitely.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. That was me.
I was going to say never give up, because she was 13 when she was releasing her chapters. And then she's now in her 30s and has got a publishing deal. And it's opened up so many doors for Jade to do other things. So I'm very proud of her. But she's one of the women that made me feel that we didn't have to follow a particular protocol. We could write what we wanted to write and in the way that we wanted to write it as well. Bearing in mind at that time of our, British people looking to the States. A lot of Black British people looking to the States. So I loved people like Terry McLaughlin, Alice Walker, Toni Morrison, Maya Angelou, all those people. But there is something that's unique about Black British fiction, because it's based here, you know, places that we know, places that we go to, and experiences that we have can be very different from experiences that other Black Americans have. So you've got George Floyd as a turning point in your culture and your history. Well, you know, we've had experiences of young Black men here, like Mark Duggan, who was shot by a police officer and led to a number of uprisings across the United Kingdom. And that's been a turning point in our history as well, where people said enough was enough. So, you know, if you're able to pull those kind of themes into your writing, you know, it makes Black British writing really rich and diverse. You know, we've got authors here that are writing fiction, romance, erotica, children's books, poetry, and I'm really pleased to be able to showcase these authors on the podcast. But yeah, but we're here and we're eager. So it's funny when publishing companies say they don't know where we are. We're here.
Yep. You're right there.
Yeah, a piece of the pie too. Yeah.
Most definitely. And speaking as an American here who is familiar with your books, I would definitely say, my audience says, go get these books right now. Order it.
Okay.
Go online. It's on Amazon. And what other places can they find your books?
I am on Barnes & Noble, and I was on Barnes & Noble as a self-published author, and I heard recently that they don't take on books from self-published authors, but my books are there. They're at Target, Walmart, and a few of the independent bookshops. I know that they're there as well. Mahogany Books is another place where you can get my books. So basically, now I would say where all good books are sold. So you don't have to go to Amazon. There are places within the States where you can buy the books from.
Yes. I love that. Especially Target and Walmart, they're particularly difficult getting into as far as for self-publishers, authors. So they, you know, they do kind of, because of the demand and production, so it's a little difficult to get in. So I commend you for getting in there. And where can we listen to your author-to-author podcast?
Yeah, the main place is Spotify, but I recently got the book into iHeart Radio, Deezer, Anchor, Audible, Amazon Music. If you go to Google and just type in author, the number two author, so the Author to Author podcast, it should list all the places where the podcast is available.
Nice. I like that. Author to author. So that you're inspired that because you're an author interviewing other authors. I like that.
Right.
So
yeah.
Is there a main platform you choose when you're recording your shows, such as YouTube, or is it just on radio and then you upload it to podcasts?
Anchor, because that was just the very first platform I was introduced to, and it then goes out to the other 19 platforms. I find Anchor very easy to upload the MP3 and to put my banner on and to upload bios and so on. So especially with my site problems, that's been the easiest site for me to use. So I will carry on using them. And as I said, once you publish one place, it then goes out to the other 20 places. I then contact the station managers where my podcast is listened to, and I send them the MP3. And it goes out at different times of the day and night during the week, from here, from Africa, from the Caribbean, which also covers the Americas. So I've got a good spread of places where the podcast is listened to.
So, being from the UK and London, can you tell me what is your favorite sport?
Oh, my. I suppose as a young person, I really loved and enjoyed netball. I'm not sure how popular netball is in the States, but I would actually go to netball matches and watch them as well. We've got a basketball team here called the London Lions, which I've taken my youngest to as well, which has been really exciting. I was a hockey player, which I again, I really enjoyed. So yeah, a full range of sports, but I suppose so by default, because I'm surrounded by men folk at home, I do follow football as well, which you call soccer.
Right.
And our favourite team at home is Arsenal. So I've been to Arsenal Football Ground at the Emirates and enjoyed a game there or two. So I think these days I'm more or less watching more sport than I'm actually doing it myself. Or I did catch the Super Bowl. But don't ask me who won or who lost. I was there for Rihanna.
Yes.
I watched the Rihanna show. She's a fellow Barbadian. So I had to stay up late to watch her and see how my girl did.
Oh, yes. She really did an incredible job. But I think most people kind of watch the Super Bowl just to see the halftime show. So you're not the only one. Especially
because,
you know, their favorite teams are not playing. That I, you know, it's like neither one of my teams are playing. So I was like, well, I'll just watch the halftime show. But it's been wonderful talking with you. And do you have a website where my listeners can look you up or to find out more about
you? Yeah, no problem. I think the best place for people to find me would be on Instagram. My Instagram handle is at lovingtheauthor. And in the profile there somewhere is my Linktree account, which is my link to all the interviews I've done to date. And people can find out more from me there. Also, if they have an opportunity for me, to talk about my books or the themes arising from my books, and they can direct message me there.
Okay. Now that is neat, especially that readers can find they have a direct access to you. I believe that also creates more readers and, you know, kind of endears your readers to you, so that no matter what you put out, they're a fan and they're going to buy it and they're going to read it. So I believe that's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, I find it. In my experience, I find that people buy into you first before they buy into your product. So
yes.
There are exclusives on my Instagram page, all the activities that I've been up to. So, for example, for International Women's Day, I was on a panel, spoke to 100 schoolgirls in my local area, which is just absolutely fantastic. These young women that are coming up now are fearless and bold and courageous. And I think I took away more from that experience than they did from me. But now the schools have reached out and they would like me to do some work with some group of young people. So one door opens another, that opens another. And they're following on Twitter and Instagram and so on, which is really nice.
Yes, that is brilliant. I like that. And you never know, just by doing one thing, it can open up other doors. So it sounds like you are well on your way, even more so when I met you the first time. Was that 2 years ago? I first interviewed you, I believe.
I think it was a bit longer than that. I think it was about 5 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I started a good while ago. In 2019, it's been a while. You had just come out with the Brothers, I believe. Loving the Brothers, yes. So, yeah, this is awesome to get back and catch up with you. And so you are well established more, and you are just killing it, so as we say here.
Well, thank you very much.
I wish you even more success. And I will definitely be listening to your podcast as well, because I love listening to other podcasts. To see what they're up to and how they do things and their platforms, and it helps us grow. We have a group here that links up with Black podcasters, and there's a Facebook group, and there's also an Instagram group you might look up that's specifically for Black podcasters, and we kind of support each other. And each one is different; they're not all the same. Some are authors, some are all kinds of things, you know, tips for moms who stay at home, things of that sort. So, but it's really good to, you know, be in touch with other Black women, Black men who have shows, and be a part of a community. So that's something you might want to look at too. But, I really enjoyed.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. I think that'd be really great for you as well.
Perhaps at some stage I can interview you on my podcast.
Yes, I would love that.
I would love to
do that.
That
would be amazing. Definitely. Just let me know when you have an available time. Do you record on a certain day or?
It's a mutually convenient date. So whenever we are able to meet, bearing in mind the time difference, it's approaching 2 o'clock here, I think.
Yes.
In the United Kingdom. So
I appreciate you saying that.
No problem at all. So yes, it's things like that. It will depend on the time zone that we're in, and I respect the fact that authors are very busy people as well. So it's a mutually convenient date and time, and so far it hasn't been an issue in terms of being able to sort out a date for us to meet.
Okay. Well, that is definitely keeping me in mind of that, because I was mindful of, well, I know it's going to be late for her with this time, but I do appreciate you taking the time to interview with me and for my audience here, United States. I'm also getting a little more global, so, and I didn't realize Ireland was one of the places, so it's kind of branching out, which is great. So I appreciate you being here, and I definitely am looking forward to the children as well. So I have Loving the Sisters, and I'm going to read that one, but I look forward to the children, because that will be like coming full circle, I believe.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, and thank you for coming, and thank you all for listening tonight. You've been listening to Pamela R. Haynes from the UK, who is an author who has put two novels. One is Loving the Brothers, and the second is Loving the Sisters. And I highly recommend them both. So thank you all, and have a pleasant evening. I wish you all blessings, peace, and love.
Those who knew the streets in Houston knew one thing for sure. The four brothers of the Kinsey Cartel were crazy as hell. The eldest two, Tramell and Tristan, a.k.a. Trey and Tripp, might have just been the craziest of all. Crossing any of them could end your life. No one messed with them until a pair of best friends, Shamar and Sin, came in and turned their world upside down. Shamar Parker, a quiet college girl, found herself given to Trey as collateral. Trey's captive would soon become his lover, and he vowed never to let her go. With an attitude the polar opposite of her best friend, Sin Murray stormed into Tripp's life, demanding the return of her friend. In the process, she also stormed into his heart, and Tripp knew he had to lock her down. But the Kinseys' old habits died hard, and their lifestyle threatened to push the women they wanted most out of their lives. Can their love survive the streets? The Beauty of This Street Love, A Texas Tale, by L. Kaysen, now available on Amazon. Get your copy today. You have been listening to the Mahogany Says Show with your host, Mahogany Silverain, on Blog Talk Radio, mahoganysilverain.net. Thank you and good night.